In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna states, Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shanti nishchati. That he is the supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices. All the planets and all the universes are exclusively his property. He is the well-wishing friend of all living beings. And if one simply understands these principles, one can attain true, lasting peace. People have been advocating the mission of peace throughout known history in this world. However, throughout the ages, countless wars, crimes have riddled the pages of history. People cannot even find peace within their own minds. Thus, how is it possible to create peace in the world? The condition of a man's mind is what he will express through his senses. And this will create the condition of the world. If you do not have something, you cannot give something. If you are agitated, really all you can do is agitate. Without peace, you cannot give peace. So the root cause of all violence, strife, conflict, war, is the condition within the minds of human society. Krishna tells us in Gita, Bandhuratmatmanastasya, that when the mind is controlled, it is the best friend. But when the mind is not controlled, it is the very worst enemy. There is the beautiful example of the chariot, which represents the body. The soul is the passenger. The charioteer is the intelligence. The reins are the mind, and the horses are the five senses. Unless the intelligence, the charioteer, can control the reins, the mind, then the senses will lead them into a deplorable condition, most dangerous situation. Arjuna says that to control the mind is more difficult than controlling the wind. Because the mind has been taken into captivity by Maya, or the illusory energy. Thus, as Maya's representative, as Maya's foot soldier, Maya is manifesting her own will through our mind. And it is her duty to make sure there is no peace. Only if we surrender to Krishna can we overcome this uncontrolled mind affected by the three modes of material nature. There is no other way. Why is there conflict, fighting, war? In every case, it is because people are greedy for the wealth of this world. Land, property, money, building structures, they are all forms of wealth. And everyone is under the two fundamental misconceptions, janasya moho yamaha mameti. They are thinking in terms of I and mine. I am this body, And whatever is in relation to this body is mine. As long as people think in terms of I and mine, there is no question of peace, either externally or internally. Why? Because it is based on an illusion. And essentially, it is all sinful. Srila Prabhupada, he explained everything according to its essence. If you claim the property of someone else, you are a thief and you must be punished. If you claim this body to be your own, you are a thief and you must be punished. It is not yours. It was created by material nature. You didn't design it in some laboratory. It was created by material nature. It is being sustained by material nature. And it will be destroyed by material nature. The soul is allowed to occupy and utilize this body for some time. However, if we occupy it and utilize it against the will of the proprietor, then we are sinful and we must be punished. Similarly, all the things that this body wants to enjoy, we want to be proprietor. My family, my home, my property, my bank balance. It is because we think it's ours that we have to remain in this material world birth after birth after birth. Until you give up the false sense of proprietorship, you cannot go back to the spiritual world. Because it is sinful. It is not yours. Everything is the property of Krishna. That is knowledge. But this is not just a theoretical conceptualization. Unless it is applied practically to our life with conviction and realization, there's very little practical substance to our knowledge. We may say everything belongs to Krishna, but still, we become very defensive and offensive. Whatever is required to enjoy it for ourselves. We want to hold on. There's that story Prabhupada tells of how hunters sometimes will catch a monkey. They'll put some nice dry fruit nuts in a container, and the monkey will put his hand. The opening of the container is just big enough for the monkey to put his hands in. But then he will fill his hands with as many of those nuts as possible. And nuts are hard. They don't squish and get soft. They stay the same size. So he just as many as he can. And then he tries to pull it out of the container. But he can't. Because his hand is so big. Because it's filled with all of this food. And the container is chained to the ground. So he's pulling and pulling and pulling and he can't get out. And the hunter, he doesn't even have to hide. He just walks right up to him. And the monkey sees the hunter's coming. And actually, all he has to do is just let go, and he's free. But he won't let go. He can't let go. He's probably thinking that, where will I ever get nuts like this again? Such an opportunity comes only once in a lifetime. In the same way, we become so attached to our material acquisitions. We're not willing to let go. Because Maya, within the mind, she gives us this false promise that this will make you happy. This will give some meaning and fulfillment to your life. But the hunter of death is fast approaching and is going to take us away. And all we have to do is let go. But it's very difficult to let go. because attachments are very strong. Srimad Bhagavatam compares them to very hard, tight knots within the heart. To loosen this knot is very, very difficult. In fact, it's impossible. Only by the mercy of Krishna, who arms us with the sword of knowledge. Knowledge, Krishna describes in Gita, is compared to a sword that can cut that knot of material attachment. You can't do it with your fingers or your hands. You can't possibly untie it because it's just too complex and it's been pulled on both sides since time immemorial. It's a hard knot. So when we read Bhagavad Gita, as it is, we hear from the great Vaishnavas, and we are armed with this sword of knowledge. But just having a sword doesn't break the knot. You have to use it. Otherwise, it's as good as if you don't have it. If you have a weapon and someone attacks you and you don't use it, it's as good as not having it at all. So by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, we have all been armed with the sword of transcendental knowledge. And we have these material attachments that are hard knots in our heart that cannot be undone. Our destiny depends on how we are willing to actually utilize this sword of knowledge to cut the knot of material bondage. Now, the Mayavadi philosophers, the way they deal with this hard knot of knowledge is Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya. It is all illusion. It should all be rejected. Everything should be rejected. We should meditate on Brahman. We should study Vedanta. That will give us proper ability to discriminate between spirit and matter. And when we understand we reject all matter and we accept only spirit. But they do not understand that matter is one of the energies of Krishna. Therefore, essentially, it is spirit. It is spiritual. Rupa Goswami teaches the principle of Yukta Vairagya, that actual renunciation is to use things in the service of the Lord, not just reject them. So if we understand that Krishna is the proprietor of everything, he's the proprietor of my mind, my body, my intelligence, even my ego. He's the proprietor of everything in creation. And if I claim anything to be my own, and independently against the will of Krishna try to enjoy anything for myself or for my loved ones as well, we are thieves. And in this material world, you can bribe, you can hide, you might be able to get away with thievery. But Krishna is the Paramatma in everyone's heart. And there are about 33 million demigods watching us at all times. So what can we get away with? The laws of nature are thorough, all-pervading within this world. And through the laws of nature, we must be punished. Some people are thieves in the mode of ignorance. Some are thieves in the mode of passion, and some are thieves in the mode of goodness. But in either case, the punishment is the bondage of repeated birth and death. And the various forms of karma that will come within that span of birth and death. When we understand that everything belongs to Krishna, and everything is meant for his satisfaction, then we can create unity, because we all have the same common purpose. People are fighting wars over whose land this belongs to. And we remember Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how much disturbed he was when he saw one of his beautiful temples leading devotees were fighting over who would get particular rooms in that temple. They were fighting over the facilities. Now how obvious, the temple is the house of God. If there's anything that's easy to understand, that the temple where the deity of the Lord is living, that at least this house is his. What to speak of the rest of the world? Fighting over rooms. Krishna's house. That means trying to claim proprietorship. And our beloved Srila Prabhupada explained how much havoc this caused in the whole mission. The devotees of the Lord are the hope for the future of the world. Unless we live by this principle, there is no hope for human society to come out of its suffering condition. As long as we are thinking we are the enjoyer, then naturally we have to become the proprietor, because you need something to enjoy. And because the desire for enjoying is unsatiable, therefore you have to accumulate more and more and more and more. You're never satiated. Hiranyakashipu, he conquered the universe, all the way up to Swargaloka. But he was never satisfied. He was sitting in the throne of Indra. Even Indra, we see, he's oftentimes not satisfied at all. He's fearful, trying to find some other facility to enjoy. But we see the lives of the great souls, even if they have nothing. We were speaking of Kolaveccha Sridhar. He had nothing, but he was satisfied. Why? Because he had peace. He understood that Krishna is the proprietor of everything and everything is meant for his enjoyment. The true understanding of I and mine is I am the eternal servant of Krishna. And what is mine? Krishna so mercifully has given me one thing. For all of eternity, I have one treasure. I have the chance to serve him with love. That is what is mine. Everything else is temporary, everything else is illusion. So when Krishna appeared in this world, he demonstrated his supreme opulence of wealth and his mere expansion, Mahavishnu. Just by exhaling, he creates all the universe. Just by inhaling, he dissolves the creation. Therefore, everything is his. And he really doesn't even care for it. He simply provides it for our sake, to punish us and teach us out of love. That's what material creation is all about. Punishment for the purpose of teaching us that we simply will never be able to be happy as long as we think in terms of I and mine. So if we want to create actual peace in this world, it is only possible when people unite on this principle that we are all Krishna's property. Let us speak, act, and think in such a way that will give Krishna pleasure. If the root of the tree is nourished, and every part of the tree is satisfied. If the root is neglected, every part of the tree will be diseased. Similarly, if Krishna is satisfied, we will find the highest bliss. If Krishna is not satisfied, we will all be miserable. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the supreme Lord of all creation. Aham sarvasya prabhava mata sarvam prabhartate iti matpavajante mam buddha bhava samandita. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The definition of wisdom, one who knows this perfectly, one who is wise, engages in my devotional service and worships me with all their heart. Krishna instructed that. And then he came again in this world to teach us practically the process of how to apply it in our life. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the master of all energies, material and spiritual, appeared in a family of Brahmins. And at that time, the example of the Brahmins was often expressed by living in poverty. Jagannath Misha, Sachi Devi, they lived a very, very simple life. They really just didn't care about accumulating anything for themselves. They actually had a thatched roof, according to Chaitanya Bhagavat, in their house. It was a simple house. And they would just keep, you know, what was necessary. At one time, Jagannath Mishra decided that Lord Chaitanya should not study anymore because he's become so very much absorbed in his studies. Day and night, he was just reading books. Jagannath Mishra was thinking that Vishwarup, he also studied these scriptures, and he realized that the material world is illusory, it's the source of suffering. Therefore, he renounced everything and took sannyas. He left us. Nimai is the only thing we have left. If he leaves us, then our life will leave us. So he told Sachi Devi, from this day on, Nimai will be forbidden to do any studies. Sachi Devi, she was alarmed by this. How can you forbid our child to study? What will be his future in the world? Jagannath Mishra said, let him be an ignorant fool, but keep him at home. If he studies the books, he'll understand that this material world is an illusion and he'll renounce everything, just like his brother. We've seen what studies do to people. Sachi said, well, how will he earn his livelihood? And who's going to marry their daughter to an ignorant fool? Jagannath Mishra said, oh, foolish woman, you do not understand that everything is happening by the will of Krishna. It is not a matter of studying and being learned. If Krishna wants you to have wealth, you will have wealth. If Krishna wants you to have a good wife, you will have a good wife. It has nothing to do with all these material endeavors. It's according to the destiny that Krishna has given us. Just look. I am one of the most learned scholars there is. I know all the scriptures. I can teach so wonderfully. But still, there's hardly even one day's food in our house at a time. And look over there. There's these business people. They do not even know how to write one letter of the alphabet. They can't even read a single page of writing. But yet, you'll see thousands of learned pundits gathered at his door asking for donations. So this we can understand that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's family lived very, very simple. And by material standards, they were quite poor. Because they were Brahmins, very exemplary Brahmins. What is that story about how Lakshmi Devi, she gave a certain blessing to the Brahmin class to remain poor, so that they don't get entangled in all the fever of material acquisition. They're supposed to be content. That's why they're the gurus of society. According to the varna and ashram, the gurus of society are the people who have the least. The guru of all the ashrams is the sannyasi. And sannyasi doesn't have anything. He has his danda. What does the danda represent? That he's renounced everything. He sacrifices body, mind, words, and life to the service of Krishna. And the guru of the varnas is the Brahman. Brahman traditionally lives very simple, very poor. But yet the rest of the society look to them for guidance and direction, meaning, purpose, and fulfillment in life. The idea is they had a higher wealth, an inner wealth. Jagannath Mishra, he stopped the studies of Lord Chaitanya. He told Nimai that from this day on, you will not study any book. Now previously, after Vishwarup left this world, Nimai was very, very well disciplined and studious. But after he was told he could not study, he became more mischievous than ever. How mischievous he became! Vrindavan Das Thakur explains, it's impossible to describe all the varieties of mischief that Nimai would perform every day, and also at night. One thing that's very beautiful is he and his friends, they would just go out and harass everybody they would see. And during the day, they would inspect in such a way, Navadvip, to make their plans for what they will do at night. Strategic planning. They would see a nice garden of banana trees. Right in, and there was someone's house right in the middle of this garden. Strategic planning. They made their plan. At night, they would put a big blanket over them so three friends can fit under one blanket. And it looked just like a huge bull at night. And they went running into the garden and knocked over every banana tree. And the proprietor would hear, boom, 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 all these banana trees being ripped apart. And he would come running out. He would see this gigantic bull. The boys would run away. And they would be laughing and laughing and laughing. Another thing they would do is they would tie shut all the doors and windows of people's houses at night. Now, because it was Vedic civilization to some extent in those days, the bathroom was always outside. It's not considered proper standards to have a bathroom in your house. Then your whole house is contaminated. So when the very strong urge to respond to the calling of nature came, they would go to the door. Didn't open. They would go to the windows. Didn't open. There was no way out. The call of nature was becoming louder and louder and louder. Soon it was no longer a call of nature. It was screaming of nature. And they couldn't get out. And then the screaming became the roar of nature. Tumultuous roar. And because that roar was inside them, the roar came out of their mouths. Let us out of here! Let us... There was no place to do it. You're laughing, but they weren't laughing. This is serious subject matter. Very serious subject matter. And Nimai and his friends, they'd be hiding and watching, and they'd be seeing everybody screaming and screaming, ah, let us out, what's happening, get us out! And they would be laughing, ah, very good, we have success. One day, Nimai was sitting on a pile of old pots that were cooked with. And they used to cook with wood, with clay pots. And because the wood or the cow dung, the bottom of the pots were black. So people came in running to Sachimata that your son Nimai is sitting on the refused black pots. So she was very alarmed. She came and she saw him. He was so beautiful. His whole body was marked with all the black soot from the bottom of the pots. In fact, it is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita that he appeared just like a beautiful golden flower. And the black spots were like black bees hovering over that beautiful flower. So Sachimata said, "Get down, get down. You must come down. What are you doing up there?" And he said, "I am not getting down." He said, "Well, where did you learn such things? This is unclean. You're a son of a Brahmin." He said, "Unless you let me study books, how will I understand what is right and what is wrong, what is clean and what is unclean? Besides that, wherever I am, everything becomes purified." So these pots were used to cook for Vishnu, therefore they're pure. And Sachimata was presenting so many arguments to bring him down, and ultimately he said, "You will not allow me to study, so how do you expect me to understand what is right and what is wrong?" And then all the ladies gathered around, they said, "Sachimata, you should let your son study. What enemy of yours has told you not to allow your son to study?" Well, then Sachimata had to go up and pick him up and take him down. Jagannath Mishra was out of town that day, and when he came back, Sachimata told him what happened. And then all the friends and relatives were saying to Jagannath Mishra, "You should let your son study. After all, everything is according to the will of Krishna. If it's Krishna's will, even if he studies and becomes a scholar, he'll stay home. Let him study." But Jagannath Mishra said, "All right, he will study." And he understood from Nimai Pandit exactly which teacher he wanted to study under, the great scholar Gangadas Pandit. He immediately became the best of all students. One morning, early, early morning, Sachimata saw a great wonder. Suddenly, her husband, Shripad Jagannath Mishra, who was also known as Purandar Mishra, he was given this title of Purandar because of his great, great scholarship and his divine attributes. Jagannath Mishra just started, he was crying. He was bowing down on the ground. He was crying out, "Oh Krishna, Krishna, please, please, let Nimai stay at home. Please Krishna, keep my Nimai at home." Sachimata said, "What's happening? Why are you all of a sudden speaking like this?" He said, "I had a dream." "What was the dream?" He said, "In this dream, our beloved son, Nimai, he shaved his head in his sika. He was wearing the saffron robes of a sannyasi. He was surrounded by all the great Vaishnavas headed by Advaitacharya. Ananda Shesha was the throne he was sitting on. His feet, he extended his lotus feet, and all the Vaishnavas were placing their heads under his feet. I saw in this dream Brahma offering prayers to him with his four mouths, Shiva offering prayers with his five mouths, Ananta Shesha with his 1,000 mouths was glorifying our son. There was a host of unlimited rishis, sages, demigods, and Vaishnavas praising our son. Then my dream changed. I saw our Nimai in the robes of a sannyasi with a shaved head, dancing in kirtan. There were hundreds and millions of people in this kirtan loudly chanting the holy names. Krishna, 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 I saw our son. He was dancing ecstatically with tears flowing from his eyes. He was in ecstasy. He was leading this kirtan procession to Jagannath Puri. And when he arrived in Puri, I heard all of these millions of people chanting the glories and the names of our son. I can understand that soon Nimai Pandit is going to leave home and take sannyas. Satyamata said, "My dear husband, it's only a dream. You should not take your dreams so seriously." In this way, the most fortunate, Jagannath Mishra and Satyamata, would have conversations about Nimai day and night. A few days after this happened, Jagannath Mishra departed from this world in his original spiritual body to go back to the spiritual abode. He was not able to tolerate even the thought of the imminent possibility that Nimai may leave him. His attachment to Nimai was so deep. It is explained that Jagannath Mishra, day and night, he was only thinking of the safety of Nimai. He would be praying to Lord Krishna constantly to protect him. At every moment he was thinking Nimai may hurt himself. He may be attacked by a ghost. He may be attacked by a witch. He used to do all kinds of pujas and worship and pray very loudly, "Krishna, Krishna, please protect my son from the witches and the demons and the ghosts. Please protect my son Nimai from any kind of harm in this world. Please, please. Everything is your property, Krishna. Everything is your property. And everything I have surrendered to you. So please, please protect Nimai. He is the only thing I have for you." And Nimai would see his father and watch him. And he would smile. He would laugh. When Jagannath Mishra left this world, Satyamata was in an ocean of grief. But whenever she would see little Nimai, her heart would be filled with bliss. She was transcendental to all anxieties. If a half hour went by when she did not see her beloved Nimai, she would practically go blind with grief. She would do anything for him. At that time, Vishwambar was very restless. Because he's the supreme proprietor of everything that exists, he expected everything to be his at any time he demanded. One time he told his mother, "I'm about to go to the Ganga to take bath. I want to worship Ganga Devi. Please give me amalaki oil, sandalwood paste, and a garland. And I will worship Ganga Devi with that." She said, "Here is the sandalwood oil. Here is the amalaki oil. I will bring the garland in a minute." "A minute! I want that garland now! What is this 1 minute?" He went wild in anger. He picked up a stick, ran into the house, and broke to pieces everything in the house. All the clay pots, he was just breaking, 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 hitting, hitting, hitting. He was the personification of anger. There were pots hanging from the ceilings. He tore them down and broke them to pieces. Every piece of cloth, every piece of clothing that the family owned, he ripped it into fine shreds and threw it. Soon there was dal and rice and ghee and yogurt and everything just all over the floor because the pots were crushed. After he crushed to powder and tore to pieces every item in the entire house, he started beating the thatched roof until it completely caved in. Then he started beating the door
Then after he crushed the door and there was nothing left to crush in the house, he ran outside and started beating trees. And after he beat the tree, he started beating Mother Earth herself. Then he fell asleep. After some time, Satchimata, she very graciously began to remove the dust from Nimai's beautiful golden body. And then she affectionately whispered in his ear, "Nimai, here is the garland." She said, "Actually, it's very good that you destroyed everything in the house, because by doing so, you have removed all inauspiciousness. Now here is your garland. Please go to the Ganga." So Nimai looked around and saw what he had done, and he felt embarrassed. And he went with his garland and the sandalwood, and he worshipped Ganga Devi and took his bath and played with his friends. Then he came home. He worshipped Tulsi, worshipped the deity, then sat down for lunch prasad. Satchimata served him the lunch prasad. And after he took lunch prasad, he washed his hands and his mouth and he sat down. And Satchimata said, "Nimai, you know, everything in the house belongs to you. It's not mine. Everything belongs to you. Now, we have nothing left. You destroyed everything. I have no food to feed you tomorrow." Nimai smiled. He said, "Krishna will provide whatever we want. There's nothing to be anxiety about." Then he picked up his books to go to study. When he came back from school, he gave his mother 2 tolas of pure glistening gold and said, "Here, you can buy whatever you need. Krishna has provided." Satchimata was perplexed. She was bewildered. She was actually in anxiety. She was thinking, where is little Nimai getting this pure gold from? Is he stealing it? Is he begging for it? Where does he get this gold? Is this really gold? I don't understand. Whenever he destroys everything, whenever there's any lack of resources in our house, he always comes home from school with gold. She was such an honest woman that when she would go to exchange the gold, she would tell the person she gave it to, she'd say, "Now, before giving me anything for this gold, you should go to at least 5 or 10 people to make sure it's really gold and have it checked out nicely. Get many opinions." So in this story, some good lessons are there. One is, who is this Vishwambar? Jagannath Sutta, Sachi Nandana. He is the Supreme Absolute Truth, the proprietor of everything that exists. It's not that he was just a little spoiled brat that got angry when he didn't get his way. No, this is very high philosophy he was demonstrating. He is the proprietor of everything. And in this Leela, he expected whatever he asked for, he should get. And if he didn't get it, he would perform this wonderful pastime. And also because he is the master and controller of all spiritual and material energies, anything he wanted at any time is his. He is Yogeshwar. He's the master of all mystic potencies. Now today, if someone produces a little bit of gold, their worship is God. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, any yogi who has any mystic cities, they only get it from him. He is the supreme proprietor of everything that exists. After he took sannyas and he was traveling to Jagannath Puri, there's that beautiful story of how he was walking ahead of his devotees. And he saw one little cowherd boy who was selling buttermilk. And Lord Chaitanya said, "Please give me your buttermilk." And the little gopa, he proclaimed, "What is the price?" And he said, My associates, they are behind me. They will pay you whatever you want." So he took all the buttermilk and drank it. They gave him back the pot. He walked on. Then Nityananda Prabhu and the other devotees came, and the Gopa said, that Swamiji over there, he took all my buttermilk and said you would pay. They looked at each other, said, we don't have anything. Lord Chaitanya would forbid anybody traveling with him to have any amount of wealth. They were not allowed to have anything. When Lord Chaitanya began this journey to Puri, he asked some of his devotees, do you have any money? And they said, my Lord, in your presence we will never have money. We definitely don't have anything. And Lord Chaitanya said, very good. We are depending on Krishna. If Krishna wants us to eat, he will give us food. If Krishna doesn't want us to eat, even if we have all the money in the world, we cannot eat anything. He gives the example of a crown prince who's living in a luxurious palace, and the finest cooks prepare a wonderful feast for him. But if somebody comes along and insults him, he becomes so bereaved in his heart, he can't eat a single crumb. Or all of a sudden he gets a fever and he can't eat anything. So he explained, eating does not come by our own arrangements. If Krishna wants you to eat, you will eat. If Krishna does not want, you should not. They were afraid to even hold one coin with them because they knew the Lord was the Paramatma in the heart and he sees everything. This was his standard. Even when I was a very young boy and I went traveling looking for God, I saw the tourists, they have money, so they just control their own destiny. Myself and my friend, we decided we will travel with no money throughout the world. Then we have to completely depend on God. And actually, we never starved. We never ate any opulent foods, that's for sure, but somehow I'm still around to tell the story. So Krishna provides if we depend on him. So they said to this little Gopa, they said, we don't have anything. So the Gopa, he was very happy. He said, you just tell Swamiji that it is my offering to him. You don't have to pay anything. Because he offered that little bit of buttermilk in a spirit of devotion, he pleased the Lord. And then he turned around, and that empty pot of buttermilk was filled with the most precious jewels, emeralds, rubies, diamonds. There were crores and crores and crores of rupees worth of precious jewels in that little bucket. And he saw that. And he wasn't at all attached to those jewels. He was attached to the Lord. He understood this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the husband of the Goddess of Fortune. I don't want his jewels. I want him. And that boy ran and surrendered his head at the feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him the most precious of all jewels, the jewel of love of God. That is the greatest of all forms of wealth. Through these very simple stories, the Lord has taught the world that the greatest of all wealth is bhakti. Prem Nidhi. The treasure of prem is the ultimate acquisition. No greater wealth